Mesa actually playable?
Double Strike. Sacred Mesa is okay. I don't really like token producers as much as I like what your primary goal should be, which is trust on Ying.
Well, yeah, but I can only do that with Seance. Nothing else actually matters. I'm gonna make like what fucking 5/5.
You need a minion. Minion? The thing where you
pay
life.
I need a mimic vat.
Yeah, you need a mimic vat, but you need that thing that like you pay life and you get a creature that's that big.
Phyrexian Processor?
Yeah.
Like,
because that'll make you like a fucking
God. I hate
2020 token, and then you populate those.
Fuck playing Magic for so long. Somebody made fun of me for that the other day. Like, they named some bullshit bulk card that's, like, actually a pick, and it's, like, fucking 3-cent pick, and I, like, just knew the name of it. And then I got mercilessly made fun of because I don't have friends, I just know Magic cards.
Magic cards are your friends.
Fuck it, no new friends.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's what I came out to at the end. Is Luminarch Primordial actually any good?
It's okay.
I really like the idea of seancing it, but it's probably not good.
I mean, obviously you want to play Sylvan Primordial and cannot.
Yeah, I'm cutting that card. If I'm thinking about it and I already have too many cards, why am I? I might just cut all these cards. Those like primary.
I cut Eyes and Skies, dude.
Yeah, I did cut Eyes and the Skies.
Okay.
I cut Eyes in the Skies. I cut Evangel of Heliod because I realized I don't have enough white permanents. Like, it's going to make like 3 tokens most of the time.
Yeah.
Although it's maybe not terrible. I don't know. It's only good with Seance again. I cut Luminarch, I cut the Brownspeak Moa, as much as I don't want to. So, Selesnya Guildmage, because the card's actually just terrible. Swords to Plowshare.
That card's great.
It's badness. Like, I want a Vidugazi Guildmage, and I don't want both.
Oh, Vidugazi Guildmage, sorry, yes, that's what you want.
Yeah, Selesnya Guildmage is like, you can pay 4 to put a 1-1 into play, or you can pay 4 to give all your creatures +1/+1.
Yeah.
And like, I have so many other pump effects, like, I have a fucking Mirror Entity in the deck, I don't need that.
I mean, the deck needs a Crater Hoof for sure.
I mean, sure, but that requires money. So, like, when I pick one of those up, like, I have a show this weekend, so I might buy some if I see them. Or buy one. I need Crater Hoof, and it definitely needs an Academy Rector.
Spawnwraith.
That's the card that's going in right there.
Spawnwraith?
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you can fucking connect with a Spawnwraith.
You got Thrag Test, right?
I don't have a Thrag Test. Well, like, when I can find one,
they're $1. So.
Yeah, they're literally cheap as shit.
I understand. I don't have one here. Everything I have here in front of me was built from a box of scraps. Like, this is stuff I had around the house. Yeah, like, the start of my deck is actually everything I own. Which is kind of cool, because, like, I look at this and I'm like, this looks real. Like, I'm not like, oh, I'm playing cards that are fucking miserable.
No, that's how my Yale deck started out. It was just, like, a bunch of shit. I'm like, hey, I have a fucking Spanish foil Mirari's Wake. Fuck it. It's going in the deck. Like, just shit I couldn't get rid of. Like, what do I do with a fucking Portuguese Mirari's
Wake? Why am I playing Chromantic Lantern? That's probably terrible in my deck. I was playing it because it's foil in Japanese.
I mean, it's not great in a two-color deck, necessarily.
I also don't really need Prismatic Lens. Like, I have to imagine there's just better mana
rocks. No, you don't need Prismatic Lens. You don't need Infinity mana rocks, really.
Oh, I just want to play them because they were foil Japanese, mostly.
Yeah, I probably want a Selesnya Signet and a Soul Ring, and, like, that might be it.
Well, I have a Soul Ring, I have a Nature's Lore, I have an Explorer, and I have a Rampant Growth. And an Everflowing
The only thing
Chalice.
That Chromatic Lantern's good for is if you had the,
Oh, it makes everything
fuck,
forest.
You should play Earthcraft in that deck.
Wait, hold on. Does it makes everything a basic, it makes it all basic land types, or is it, they just
no,
tap
No, it just color? Taps for mana of any color, so you can tap your forest for white if you...
Yeah, I don't really need that. Well, I was going to say, if I turn them all into forests, it works with Colonian Twin Grove, so.
No, correct.
We're talking about EDH and not on the podcast. We should be, like, the one time that me and Jason could actually have a conversation.
No one, wants to hear it on the podcast, though.
Yes, it is. This is the podcast. It's all getting put together.
No, don't do that, because that's how...
No, I like those casts. Like, those casts are balls of the wall.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's Corbin's the only one that complains about that.
Yeah, I'm getting my advice from Jason, the EDH Master Alt, here. I finally broke down and built an EDH deck after making fun of the format. I had one together years and years ago. I guess you could call it, like, the original EDH. It was really before it was, you could just play any generals, only when you had the Elder Dragons. And then I built a draw new deck after that. And that deck was just to make people angry because everyone started playing competitive stuff. And so it was like a turn two combo. And since then, I've just completely left this format behind. And Jason gave me the bug again. not really, I just had nothing else to do, but I broke down and played EDH a couple weeks ago and realized that I always play EDH when I'm with Jason. So I put together this deck so I can quit mooching his.
Ryan, just say no, please. Please just say no.
I mean, I want to say no, but
Ryan did everything right that someone in the finance community getting into EDH does. First of all, you don't buy cards, okay? You build a fucking EDH deck like Tony Stark built his Iron Man armor in a cave with a box of scraps. So that's Ryan true. Started out, he's like, I got some stuff for Trustani, this will be good. So he's building Trustani because it allows him to play his favorite card ever, which is what,
yeah.
Ryan?
Seance. I have a full Japanese one. I'm so excited. It looks like a box of scraps, except for there's some like $100 pieces of box of scraps in here.
But I mean, that's stuff you can't sell on TCG Player. So almost all of the stuff in my first EDH decks was like foreign language stuff that I couldn't sell on TCG Player, and I had stopped selling on eBay at that point. So that was stuff that was going to languish in trade binders forever, and it was stuff that I had in my decks, so it was always on me. So if someone wanted to trade it, I'd trade it out of the deck, you know. Or, like, trade for an English copy and take a downgrade so I could sell a copy on TCG Player. So the cards weren't doing nothing. But something that EDH deck building allowed me to do was access an entire new classification of player. It was the people that, you know, there was EDH Night at the Shop that I never went to. And all of a sudden I go to EDH Night at the Shop and everyone's like, oh, I need all these cards. You know, so I've got just boxes and boxes of EDH stuff that's foreign language. Or just stuff that, you know, isn't really worth selling on TCG Player because it's like a dollar. And like, after fees, you might as well just shoot yourself in the face. But if you're like, here's a pile of $1 cards for your, you know, Huntmaster of the Fells that you don't care about, you're getting rid of a lot of crap. You're helping someone out and they think, oh man, this guy's the man. Anytime I wanted a bunch of stuff for EDH, he had it. And all I had to do was, like, trade a standard card that I got in a booster pack. So as a financier, like, being able to access that community was actually really, really valuable. And, knowing EDH allows me to more accurately, A, assess cards when they first come out. Like, when we do the spoiler review, I'm thinking of EDH playability. And it allows me to anticipate what people building certain decks will want. Because if someone tells me what their general is, and I can flip through a big stack and be like, well, are you playing this? Are you playing this? Are you playing this? Sometimes you can have a better understanding of what their cards they want than they do. So really, I think as a financier, as much as I used to poop on EDH, there's a lot of value to it. And, you know, it's fun to play, and it was something that my wife found accessible so I could play with her.
All right, I'm going to stop you before you continue on to another long-winded rant that everyone else that doesn't like EDH doesn't want to hear, but I think, you know, hell.
If you like finance.
Yeah, why don't we just make this our finance 101 topic, EDH and the power.
There you go.
Are you saying that so finance 101 could be done?
Yeah, pretty much.
Did it. Yeah. I mean,
me too.
That's fine with me.
Yeah.
Now, what's the walkaways for people? So basically what you're saying is, like, you know, you could definitely get into your EDH with your random scraps, and through that, you're able to play with cards that you normally wouldn't, get access to a community you normally wouldn't.
I think some other walkaways are, if you are a person who doesn't get to play a lot of Magic such as I am, it is a great way to keep up with weird card interactions. Because you see things in EDH you'll never see otherwise. And I think that the one reason I still do enjoy every once in a while sitting down and playing a game with Jason isn't because I particularly enjoy playing Magic that much anymore. If anything, trying to play competitive Magic again this year has taught me that. It's because I can sit there and play a game, and at the end of it, well, I shouldn't say the end of it because I rarely make it to the end. I usually quit before that point, but you don't care. But you see so many cool little things, and then enough cool little things happen that there's this clogged up board, and that's when I quit caring. So, like, for me, it's perfect because I get to see all these cool little things and then quit caring about them once they've become too many things for me to worry
about.
Ryan
pretends that he didn't get a huge erection when he put Illusionist Bracers on Mayel and then copied that with Steranic Resonator. He pretends.
It was cool.
Okay, Mayo? Who's Mayo and who's this stuff? Tell us the interaction for the people.
Oh, come on, Marcel.
Oh, I don't want to do this. I'm not a judge. But no,
it's... Jason, explain it. Explain it well, because you know.
People out there, like, read Mayo, okay? Like, you look at the top five cards of your library and you put a big creature into play. And Illusionist Bracers lets you do that twice, and Steranic Resonator lets you double a trigger, so you do the math. Oh, yeah, it's just doing big, dirtily fun, swingy stuff. It's a bulk rare format, so like all the stuff that's in your crap binder all of a sudden is good in the deck. You're like, what the hell am I going to do with Boros Battle Shaper? Oh, I don't know. How about win a game of EDH with Boros Battle Shaper? You could bulk it out for a dime, or you could put it in a deck. You know?
I mean, and that's fair. I think the one other good takeaway too is don't stress out if you don't have all the cards. Like even, like right now, I need an Academy Rector for this deck. I'm not going to rush out and buy an Academy Rector because this deck is playable without one. But it's something cool for me because I don't really have cards I ever need. Like people ask me that all the time. Like, what do you need? I'm like, I need cards that I can make money at. Like that's legit why I buy cards. You know, it has nothing to do with things like that. So having an EDH deck is something where if I see something that's like really pimp and cool and I know I have it in my EDH deck, since I've already got half this deck or more already foreigned out or foiled out, like I might as well just finish it. And, well, that's a problem too. I guess that's another takeaway.
Yeah.
Don't spend more than you need to on EDH. There's a lot of takeaways from this, but the point is, EDH is the devil, and don't play it unless you really just have gotten bored with all of the forms of magic.
See, I see this as so dangerous. I see this as dangerous. No, seriously though. I mean, think about it. You take a bunch of these, cards. Oh, these are a bunch of crappy cards, and you put it together, and all of a sudden you care about this deck, and you're like, oh, I'm gonna foil out this card. I'm gonna get a foreign of this card. Next thing you know,
it's only as dangerous as you want it to be. You can be the guy who drinks a beer occasionally, or you can be the alcoholic who goes out and spends, thousands of dollars on alcohol.
Like. Yeah, you've seen the cardboard crack though, right? You know, after a long night of drinking with Magic players, all of a sudden you got a bunch of foil scattered everywhere in an empty wallet. So,
but at the same time, like the cards you're picking up for EDH are cards that are typically not going to get devalued. And especially if you're picking up foreign foil copies of them, like rarely is that stuff getting reprinted. Cause if it gets printed in a dual deck or anything like that, it's not going to be foreign foil. Like my Cage Son got reprinted in the Duretti deck, correct, Jason?
Yes.
Is it Duretti or whatever the red guy
is? The red one. The Italian goblin.
Yeah, the Italian goblin. And, normal Cage Sons obviously, took a pretty big hit from that as far as their ability to go up in price over the next couple of years. But the foil Japanese one isn't going to be impacted at all. So, it's not that terrible. Just don't overspend.
Okay.
I actually de-pimped my deck. Like, I had a Japanese foil Platinum Empyrean, and someday someone's going to want to offer me a regular Platinum Empyrean and a bunch of other cards, and I'm going to be happy to do that because the non-foil is just as playable. Like, I'm at the point with some of my decks where, the only way to optimize it's like, all right, well, I need a second Time Warp, so maybe I'll go spend $100 on a Temporal Mastery. I'm like, for $100, I could just buy, two new decks. So don't get high from your own supply. And they're actually a good way, like what Ryan's doing with his Japanese foil, what is it?
Cage Sun?
No, the other one.
Chromatic Lantern?
Yes. Like what Ryan's doing with his Japanese foil Chromatic Lantern. He's just sort of, it could sit in a binder or you could get some use out of it. So it's a good way to sock value away also because that's never going down. So
what about, I heard the paradox of, the problem with being a financier and trying to have like EDH deck or even a cube is that you just want to sell all the cards and get rid of all the value.
And I think that's a fine thing to do in EDH because you can always find another card to put in your deck. If the card was so expensive, it's 1 out of 99. So unless your entire deck is built around it, I don't want to sell my foil Tristani, but this thing's also heavily played. That's why I still have it. So, if somebody wants to offer me a real price for it, absolutely. I will just go get a bulk Tristani and put it in my deck. But at the same time, I guess it comes down to just don't overspend.
Oh, that's another thing. So in addition to foreign stuff, I love to put damage cards in my EDH decks too.
Oh yeah.
So especially if you're buying at an event and people are like, oh, this is a really chewed up card and it could go in an EDH deck. And you're like, well, I'll give you 50 cents for it. And they're like, it's garbage. Sure. Sold. As long as it's got four corners, it can go in an EDH deck. As long as it's sleeve playable.
Yeah,
it's not like your friends are
going to
give you a game loss at the kitchen table anyway. So damaged cards that you can't really sell and, would take a long time to trade off that you can get super cheap. Or you get in collections also. Damaged stuff from collections, that's the perfect place to put that sort of thing.
So what about
cards that are otherwise really hard to move or impossible to move, just putting them in decks. And then eventually someone might be like, I don't care what language it is, I just need a Miri's Guile. And then you just, take it out of the deck, replace that with a Sylvan Library, and you just keep going. So that's kind of what I do with EDH. I'm not I realize I'm sort of I'm not serious about EDH when I write a weekly column about it, but I don't know. I'm kind of not.
You don't have to be serious about Magic because the EDH, like, you're going to see a new set and you're going to be like, oh, these two, unless you're like Jason and have like 20 decks built, like me with my Tristani deck, I might see one or two new cards in each set that I actually want to pick up. And I mean, there's like no cons cards in this deck, or if they are, they're nothing real. Oh, I have a Blossoming Sands, but I don't think there's anything like else crazy. And there's a couple of M15 cards in like the form of, Yasin and Colonian Twin Grove, but like, other than that, everything else is, you know, at least a couple of years old for the most part. So you're not really picking up a lot of new cards at any one time. So it's kind of a good way to still be able to play Magic as a finance person. And once you have the deck built, it's not such an investment to keep playing.
So it's sort of, cause, you know, you remember how I used to poop on EDH as a format on this podcast.
Oh yeah. So I still do.
I'm still going to. Oh yeah. There's merits to it. And I got into it for a reason, and I think that you should look into it.
Okay, there you go. That's it. That's good.
Corbin was here.
Can't hear no more of a question. Corbin, yeah, if Corbin was here, he would be clinking his ice cream bowl and saying, you know what?
Podcast.
I like to play EDH also, because EDH is such a fun format.
And it allows you to access a new group of people, plus it allows you to play with damage cards or cards that are hard to move. Corbin would say all that, so I wish he were here.
But no, Corbin, Corbin's in France right now, though.
Oh,
or he might be on a plane right now. He might be on a plane to France.
He's probably there by now. He left yesterday, didn't he? Yeah, he definitely left yesterday.
Oh, I don't pay attention to that man's life.
I try not to.
I'm not gonna do the math. Who knows? Is it a 17-hour flight or is it a 12-hour flight?
I don't think it's 17. It's probably depending. I bet they like left from Chicago. Probably it's probably like 11 or 12 hours. I don't want to sound like an asshole, but I've flown to France several times. So, boy, there's no way to say that and not sound like an asshole, is there? Like, oh yeah, with my jet-setting lifestyle, I'm in France quite frequently.
So what was so cool about France from your visits there, Jason?
Well, I mean, most people don't know this about me, but, my freshman year of high school, I actually did not live in the United States. I actually lived in England for a year and went to school over there. So the thing about being that close to Europe is if you get like a long, weekend at school or like a bank holiday or, you know, we got a long break off for Easter. We got a long Christmas. So when you got big holidays like that, with Europe being so close, you could literally drive to France, you know, from England. You, take your car. There's a tunnel underneath the strait there and, you know, you could drive all over Europe. We flew quite a bit too. So, I've been to France a few times, and a lot of places in Europe. I didn't really go to Eastern Europe or, you know, east of there, but I visited most of Europe and it was a really good opportunity for me. So I felt like even though I was kind of at, you know, like at the shitty teenager age where I was like, ooh, nothing's cool. Ooh, a bunch of art. Don't care. I still think I got a lot out of it, and I think that was a good experience. So, I have made that flight quite a few times, and, it's no picnic, but you get to sleep, and depending on how much you paid for your ticket, it can be a comfortable ride, and you get to watch a lot of movies at least.
See, I always thought I was going to have the opportunity to make fun of you when you said you drove from England to France, because I was
that's a thing, man.
But then you said there's a tunnel? Oh my
God. Yeah, there's actually a tunnel. You'd like drive your car and they load you up on train cars almost. So you're like with three or four other cars in a train car.
Huh.
You know, going, zipping through this tunnel.
And how long does it take?
It's been decades. I want to say the Eurotunnel trip is maybe 2 hours, something like that. I don't know. All I remember the Eurotunnel trip was that I had Pokemon on Game Boy and that was like all I did that whole, like, trip through the tunnel, so it wasn't long enough for me, because I just wanted to beat those Elite Four at that point in my life. So, it's probably a couple hours. It's certainly more economical than flying, because a flight's not super necessary. But then you get to France, and your steering wheel's on the wrong side of your car, and you feel like a douche, but, I mean, what can you do? You're going to feel like a douche in France regardless. We just told people we were Canadian.
Don't say you're American.
That seems much better.
So Worlds happened. We just had day two of the Players Championship. Shout out to Raymond Perez. He made it and he did decently. He didn't hit his goal that he wanted to hit, but you know, he's playing with the top tier talent out there, and he did a great job.
He topped 24 of the event, so we're really pleased.
It's true. And I mean, it's crazy, but like, you know, when I thought about it at first, it was like, oh man, I know he's going to be kind of bummed with how he did, but then you look at the players who like finish worse than him, and one of them is like the player of the year. So, I mean, it's not really anything to be said about, you know, it's one of those tournaments where like just getting there is the accomplishment. Yes, obviously you want to do well in it, and there's a lot of things on the line, but you get 5 pro points walking away, 2 grand. Like you can't be mad and you get to spend a week in France. Like I'm extremely jealous.
Without a doubt. So there's some exciting things that did happen financially at the at Worlds. I know we now have what, $9 face stitchers?
The foil ones. So this is a price that's not going to stick. And I actually said on Twitter, hey, anybody that bought foil fade stitcher close to $9, retweet this so I can laugh at you. Like this was one of those self-fulfilling prophecy type deals where, you know, we saw the card on camera. QS sent out an insider email that basically said, this might be something to watch. I don't really think this is super actionable to buy Fate Stitcher. I mean, the foils are like a buck. Maybe you could make a play there, but we're not endorsing that. We're not super happy about it. You know, it was real kind of wishy-washy about it. They weren't really – everyone just who has seen a few of these events in the past is sort of like, man, I don't think there's a play to be made here. But somebody, you know, said, oh, foil Fate Stitcher. So the reason Fate Stitcher is relevant is there is a new Jeskai Ascendancy build where people are using Fate Stitcher, which is a card that untaps a permanent, and Fairy Conclave, which taps for a blue mana. When you turn it into a creature, it untaps with the Jeskai Ascendancy. You tap it for a blue mana, then the Ascendancy untaps it. So between Fate Stitcher and the Fairy Conclave, you don't need mana dorks. So it was a new, more blue-focused, more cantrip-focused version of the deck. And since it's modern playable, you know, we've seen that modern has a non-trivial effect on foil prices. So modern-only cards, you know, the foils matter because modern is a non-rotating format. So I don't necessarily think that there was a play to be made on foil Fate Stitcher. I was certainly looking at them when they were a dollar, and I didn't buy in, so... You know, this isn't me saying, oh, well, it sucks because I didn't buy any. It's just, I would be really interested to see where that price ends up. And unfortunately, I don't think it's going to go back to bulk foil like it was. I think it's going to end up probably twice what it was before, which is anytime one of these dumb spikes out of nowhere that mean nothing happen, it never goes back to its original price because prices are just too sticky in paper. And no one's inclined to be like, well, I guess I'll sell it for exactly what I bought it for and eat all those fees. So people are real slow to price the card down rapidly, and it's just that it's going to be sticky. So unfortunately, I think Foil Fate Stitcher is probably going to be a $2 to $2.50 foil from now on. But I don't think that was the financially relevant thing of the weekend. I think it's more interesting to note how much play Siege Rhino got play in Modern, and really how the Modern nobody really metagamed. People seemed to play decks they were comfortable with. So I thought that was cool. Like you saw a lot more Scapeshift than you would see in an event like that. I think the only person that tried to like super metagame was Sam Black, and I think he ended up frustrated and wishing he hadn't. It was just sort of one of those events where it's like I'm just going to play a deck I'm comfortable with because who knows what I'm going to be up against.
See, and I feel like Standard was a lot like that too, except for was it Lars who was playing the deck? The only deck I really like. Focused on and was like, this is something cool that I've been waiting to see was the Jeskai control deck that showed up. And I'm not really sure how he finished with it. So like maybe he 0-5'd and or 0-4'd or whatever. And I'm going to sound stupid here, but, really the issue that Jeskai control has had is, and the same problem that any reactive deck has had right now is there's so many decks that are good that it's really hard to attack the entire format. And you don't really have like a Sphinx's Revelation to close out the game like you used to. And, it's kind of cool to see, you know, the pros still working with these decks and not abandoning these control builds. Cause the blue-black control is good, but until it gets its wrath, like, it's not where I want to be at the very least playing control. So it's very interesting to me to see, you know, this new archetype emerging. And I've seen a little bit online, but I was happy to see one of the better players, you know, one of the pros, one of these 24 playing something like that.
I think something else that was really interesting is, I think really good Magic players really like lots of green right now. You know, I think you like the average FNM player like really likes lots of red, and black's pretty sexy right now too. But I think like you're really the John Finkels of the world really like lots of green. So on Money Draft, JR was saying that he expected the Pro Tour to have lots of green, and that didn't really necessarily pan out as much as he thought it might. And it was really interesting to see almost like a delayed sort of a deal, like the same people you expected to be playing a lot of green at the PT maybe didn't as much, but you saw a lot of green. There were a lot of Hornet Queens and carry edits on, coursers on camera at this event. So I thought that was interesting. It was sort of like JR made the right prediction, but at the wrong time. And, you know, you're still wrong when you do that, but it was really funny to kind of see his prediction come true when you got, you know, people who are, you know, the best at Magic in the world. And what do they want to be doing? They want to be casting big green stuff for value and doing unfair stuff like making a million Hornets. So I thought that was cool.
I mean, the same can be true said about the, like, format in general, right? It's like we still have this ever-evolving format. It's the same reason that Control's having issues. It's the same reason that the rest of the format's awesome. I mean, Abzan has really just kind of been this catch-all. Like, you can always play the deck. It's very consistent. It's good. But we're seeing, like, a new Jeskai Ascendancy deck appear every week. And even the Jeskai our Control deck was running a copy of Ascendancy just for the card draw, I imagine, more than anything else. But, you know, now there's this Jeskai Tokens deck that's pretty cool and stuff like that. So, like, with this ever-evolving metagame, you're not only seeing, you know, the green decks are finally coming around and, you know, in force, but I think a main reason of that being is that deck is extremely good at just kind of playing against everything. There's not really a terrible matchup for the Abzan decks.
And, I love your definition of an ever-evolving format. It doesn't matter if the Jeskai Ascendancy deck is winning with Retraction Helix or whether it's running with... The format evolves so the Jeskai Ascendancy deck can win in a lot of different ways.
No, I'm saying like that deck is a proof of the evolution of the format. Like that deck has existed since the beginning and look at what it is now. It doesn't even run a Retraction Helix anymore. It's not even a combo deck and it's still extremely good.
That's true. I was just giving you a hard time.
And you look at the beginning, like when we first saw the format, nobody saw a good Mardu deck coming. And suddenly Mardu, like, it's one of the best decks out there. Like, honestly, if I had to label a deck as the best, which is not easy, nor do I want to have to do, and do not quote me, I would say that Mardu is probably the best deck right now.
I take exception with that. I think a lot of people predicted a Mardu deck. And I think when somebody showed up with a Mardu Planeswalker deck at the PT, that was something really... nobody super expected, but you could kind of see it coming because, man, Crackling Doom is so cheap right now.
Like, yeah, so is Chained to the Rocks. I don't want to get into this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's just really weird. Like, there's got to be a Mardu deck, and I think people saw it, but it's the Jeskai Ascendancy combo deck is a little bit more obvious. It's like, well, we need the stuff to go off, and then we need the cantrips and that kind of stuff. So that basically builds our deck for us. It's really tough to get a control deck going, to figure out, oh, what do I need a two of? What do I need as a three of? And I think the fact that Goblin Rabble Master puts such a clock on those control decks, the fact that they can't even deal with Rabble Master super effectively means, like, you can't even really look at that until Rabble Master's gone. So they didn't really – Wizards wasn't trying to make a control deck totally unplayable with Rabble Master. I don't think they anticipated people getting that much value out of it, but – I think if the format slows down a little bit, you know, we get more Siege Rhinos than Rabble Masters, I think what we're going to see is somebody figure out, like a Planeswalker control deck, and I think Mardu's a great shell, because Crackling Doom is one of the best removal spells ever printed, and they made it so powerful because it's so hard to cast, and they balanced it that way, as opposed to balancing it in terms of power level.
Speaking of balancing power level, let's move into Picks of the Week.
Pick of the week. Time for the pick of the week.
If no one else would like to jump in, I could go first.
Sure. Go right
I actually
ahead.
Didn't want to do anything reactive based on what happened this weekend.
Hold on. I think Corbin, he's texting me his pick of the week right now.
If you say Buffalo Wild Wings.
No, he's saying foil. Hooting Mandrills? What the hell?
Hooting Mandrill. Mandrills is that's a real card. That's something that everyone looked at. They're like, okay, this is ridiculous and limited. But people are like, man, could this be something that we want to play in Legacy? So, yeah. I don't know. I think Hooting Mandrills is definitely modern playable.
Yeah, see, so I put out, because I have not been playing Magic lately, so I put out like a tweet saying, give me some picks of the week. So I got that out from Chris Lansdale, Landalicious, and actually Jason W. They both said Hooting Mandrills, and it stuck out because, like, you know, Delve cards, there's only been one Delve card, and that was the Demon. I forgot the name of it. And what was it?
Are you talking about the old one?
Tombstalker.
Yeah, Tombstalker.
Tombstalker? Yeah.
Yeah. But, and I mean, this Delve has been proven to be very powerful mechanic. Anything you can do to lower costs is pretty insane. And a 4-4, I mean, Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time does eventually get banned. Like, I do see pressure on, you know, other Delve cards as being a potential.
4-4 Trampler in Legacy is actually formidable. It's much better than it is in Modern.
Yeah.
Especially if you're shrinking your graveyard, because potentially Delving could shrink their Tarmogoyf, which makes the Mandrill the biggest creature on the board.
I mean,
in Modern,
the question,
they've got more,
like,
tools, I think.
That card is, like, it's fighting for Goyf's spot, right? Because, like, you're never playing both. And yeah. I don't know. I just don't see a deck that you want that in that, like, it's better than Goyf.
I think there's potential. And, I mean, at a dollar for foils.
I think it's
going
to be, like, a deck at most.
I think it could be a
one-drop so
in, like, a Canadian Threshold type deck, though. Like, maybe it doesn't take Tarmogoyf's spot. Maybe it takes Nimble Mongoose's spot.
Oh, that's terrible. No, that's bad. Like, the Nimble Mongoose wins you matches.
Because of, like, the Hexproof, I understand.
Yeah, yeah, you can't, I would rather replace Tarmogoyf than the Nimble Mongoose in that deck.
I think the fact that people are even trying it speaks to the power level of Hooning Mandrills. I'm not buying any foils right now, but it's not the dumbest thing that's ever come out of somebody's mouth either.
Yeah, so. I think it's cute, and, like, buy foils if you want them, or if you think you're going to play them, maybe, but I wouldn't expect to make a lot on them financially.
If you picked up a few dollar foils, and then all of a sudden, you trade them into there, and then maybe somewhere down the line, it does happen, and it becomes a $10 foil at some point, or $5
yeah,
foil.
I mean, if you're going to throw them in a box for years, sure, but, like, you have to look at a couple of facts about this card, too. It's never going to be a 4-of. Like, you don't want to play this card as a 4-of. Even in the decks that, like, can actually play it, like, unless you're doing absolutely nothing else with your graveyard, which Threshold is not, like, you're not playing 4-of this, which...
You're not happy drawing a second.
Yeah, so it really, like, it makes me wonder, like, even if the card did see play, it's probably going to be a 1 or 2 of. Mm-hmm. And at that point, like, it's a newer foil. I mean, I can see some appeal to it, but, like, I feel like this is as actionable as Fate Stitcher is.
Okay, and it's still a common, so a common foil is not super...
Well, I mean,
started.
Yeah, and it's Delver's out of common, which common is like, also. You know, every time a new set comes out, we say this, but it's the most open set, you know, in history. So, you're you know, there's even more foils of that than there is Fate Stitchers out there by a lot.
Okay.
And Fate Stitcher's also an uncommon, and that might not actually be true because of the premium packs, but either way, I mean, I feel like... It's equatable at most. And if you're looking at cards, you know, that would go up from a hype weekend, that would be the kind of thing I could see happening.
Well, it's too late to make money on Fate Stitchers, not really too late on Mandrills, so I think that's...
Yeah. I mean, I just think you're going to be sitting on a lot of Hooting Mandrills that cost you a dollar and are going to be worth a dollar in 3 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of said I didn't really want to be reactive in my picks because I saw a lot of people saying stuff like, well, Siege Rhino's getting a lot more modern play, and the foils seem a little underpriced. I didn't want to do anything reactive like that. I think I want to be proactive, and I want to look at a long-term pick, and I think right now, non-foil Young Pyromancer is probably the cheapest it's going to be. And I think it will probably be, in a year or two, probably double what it is now.
I can, like, see that.
Just,
I like that.
No one's opening the sets anymore, and people still have them. Like, people haven't dumped off all that, you know, all that stuff. It's still probably in boxes and binders and collections. Like, when people sell stuff, they're like, oh, I bought, you know, a deck builder's toolkit, and you get a couple Young Pyromancers in there. Like, this is a card people still have, and we're pretty much at peak supply, and they're going to start getting taken out of the system, put in decks and put in store inventories. I think you want to buy at peak supply, and that's about right now. So, I don't actually hate them for cash right now, and I hardly ever say that, but I don't love them for cash, but I don't hate them. So if you wanted to sock some money away, it's gonna be it could take a while, but this is like a guaranteed gainer because I don't really see them reprinting it necessarily. But the foil is more safe of a reprint than the non-foil, but I think the foil is I don't know, because I kind of thought 20-something was the ceiling, and then it hit 50 for a week, so it could do anything. But I don't like the price of the foil right now, even though it could probably go up and probably will. Like, I think what you have to pay right now isn't worth the return. But I do like the non-foil. You're taking a little bit of a risk from a reprint, but I think it's fine. I don't hate them for cash, so that's my rant.
Plus, modern foils look ugly, so you don't want to buy one of those anyway.
Well, I mean, it's playable in so many formats.
Marcel and his cube hate again.
The fact that it's vintage playable, I think it really matters, man. So
this is the red 2 drop. Like people were saying, oh yeah, it's a red 2 drop. Oh, it's not in rare. Who cares?
It's the red Goyf.
Yeah, I mean, you have Dark Confidant, Snapcaster Mage, Stoneforge Mystic, and Tarmogoyf. What does red have? Doesn't have dual caster mage. I think it's probably young Pyromancer.
Definitely young Pyromancer. Until they make a red rare 2 drop that upseats it, this is the current champion.
Yeah, it's sad that it's an uncommon.
Yeah.
But,
oh, well.
I mean, what was it before? Like,
there wasn't one. It was like
Slith Firewalker,
Grim Lavamancer. Like,
or
it has to cost 2 though. Grim Lavamancer's not a 2 drop.
What about the level up guy, the red one?
Oh God,
Kargan Dragon Lord. I would rather Slith Firewalker. That had more of an impact on a format than like that. At least was a real deck.
Slith Firewalker was your clock. That card was so good.
And Sly, you're like Slith Firewalker, and then I'm gonna play Molten Rain, and then play Stone Rain. Enjoy your day.
And then you play, and then you play Arc Slogger, and they're at like 4. Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, I just want to cast Tooth and Nail. You're like, yeah, have fun with 3 lands.
You will never cast Tooth and Nail because you will not play a second land ever.
Yeah.
Oh, that was so much fun.
That deck was a lot of fun. But, I mean, that's probably like the closest I ever felt to like a card being on par with, like that was the same kind of thing. It's just like a Goyf. Like if you don't deal with it, it's going to kill you. And so the Firewalker was the same way.
But no one's playing that outside of standard, so it's not really fair to compare.
Right, exactly. But that's why I'm saying, like, I don't know that we even like ever had a 2 drop in red that was just like, you know, probably honestly, as sad as it is, Goblin Piledriver is probably your red 2 drop before that.
I don't know how sad that is. That's legit. Piledriver is, I mean, it's narrow, but it's powerful.
Yeah, but by being in narrow, it's no longer the premier.
Right, it's not a red 2 drop, it's the Goblins 2 drop.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, that's probably the best thing you had before that as far as things that we're really seeing play in, like, Eternal formats.
I mean, but, only because Recruiter's banned.
Yeah, well, sure. But I don't know. So anyway, now that we've, like, you know, broken off and talked about Young Pyromancer and then every other 2 drop imaginable. Let's see, I have to come up with a pick of the week. Huh?
If I ever became a magic themed rapper, I would be Young Pyromancer.
Oh. Yeah, it's not too bad.
You and me and Ray can get together and we'll rap sometime about magic.
So my pick of the week is going to, I'm going to do mine. That was Corbin's, was the Hooting Mantles. But I'm going to take one here. This is for all the MTG. He sent me one. He says Silver Hive and Hive Lord. They're a little too cheap right now, and it's a good time to get in on them for the long term.
Silver Hive Lord?
Silver Hive.
I did say Silver.
Like, Silver Hive. Sliver.
Oh my goodness.
You're a treasure.
Hey, I'm the gift that keeps on giving, just like herpes.
Maybe that's it. Maybe Marcel is the gift.
The gift. I have the talent. I mean, I don't have a talent. I'm just naturally.
Brian doesn't have talent either. He is talent.
I am the prodigy of this podcast.
I reek of talent, supposedly.
I reek, right.
They say you can't smell yourself, so I don't know.
I reek it, but it ain't of talent.
Well, that did it quickly.
It's all good, usable stuff, guys.
So what do you think about Silver Hive and High Lord about picking them up right now?
I liked picking them up when they were what I thought was their bottom 2 months ago. So this certainly can't
them
be.
For now. We kind of thought the whole finance community wouldn't take their eye off the ball, but they did. So I didn't expect these to go lower. I expected that because we talked about a threshold price. It's like, if they hit this, you should buy them. And they went below that. And nobody gave 2 shiny shits, so I was really surprised.
So here's what happened. Nissa went to $40, and Rabblemaster went to $20-some. And suddenly, like, any redemption sets out there, like, everything else had to drop because those 2 cards are so expensive. And you had other cards in there that were expensive. And suddenly now you have, like, Nissa's cut in half, and Rabblemaster is, you know, almost cut in half from their max prices. And so I can definitely see some of these other cards. I actually talked about Soul of Innistrad this week. I wasn't going to repeat myself as people are yelling at me about doing that for my articles to the podcast, but Soul of Innistrad, I think, has a lot of upward movement from the Sidisi Whip deck that saw play this weekend, too, just for that same reason. Like, it couldn't really hold value before, but now that the rest of the set's kind of calmed down a little bit and these really hot cards have fallen a little bit, I think we can see things like the Sliver Hive Lord and the, you know, as Souls see a little more gain.
I don't even know how much I hate the buy price on foil Sliver Hive Lord right now, because that's something that's a little safer from reprint, because what are the odds they do another premium Slivers deck, first of all? So, like, if they did reprint it in some sort of supplementary thing, unless it's a dual deck and that's the general, like, Slivers versus Zombies or some crap, I don't know.
Is it even legendary?
Sliver Hive Lord?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Would they make that the...
Ask me something like that I don't know off the top of my head?
I don't think it's legendary. Maybe
it is. Of course
it is.
People are using it as a general.
Oh, are they?
Yeah. I mean, it's not the best sliver, but, like, it's accessible. It's not the best, but, like, if you just want to make your first deck.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, yeah, I mean, the foil is, it's going to be one of those really expensive foils. Just, like, you just know it is. So, I guess... You don't have to do it now, but, like, it's not probably going to get cheaper. But we've said that before, haven't we?
Yeah. I mean, all I know is Sliver Legion's on the buy list for $30.
Non-foil.
And that card's from Future Sight, which, you know, yes, 10 years old or so at this point, but...
Oh, I'm so old.
Card is 30. Yeah, I know, right?
And you know what happens? The box price. A card like Tarmogoyf and, like, the possibility of a foil Goyf really just jacks the box price up. So you could see something similar, like, for a decent card in World Wake is going to, like, really start to go out of control because the World Wake box price is so high because of Mind Sculptor. So that's something to notice, that that's a thing. If there's one, like, super fetch card that can move the box price on its own, like, utility stuff on that is going to go up a little bit out of proportion with what you'd expect with something within that block but in a different set. That's a thing that happens.
So off on a tangent, just to, you know, keep this cast rolling on speaking of the too old, one of my friends made a comment, Marcel, when they were talking about the Vintage Masters coverage this weekend. They were like, man, can you imagine drafting some of those cards? And they were like, oh my goodness, I can't even imagine, like, opening up cards like Deep Analysis in a pack and things like that, and just, like, or not Deep Analysis, what was the card he was talking about? It was something in that deck.
It really matters the story.
Yeah, but, like, whatever it was, and I was
just
like,
all I could think of
is, like, I have opened those cards in packs. And it's just like, every time I was watching him do that draft, and I was just like, oh, outside of, like, the mana drain and stuff that was in there, like, I've opened all of those sets, and I'm just like, oh, like, it's kind of depressing.
See, I wasn't around, and I didn't play Magic during that time. I dipped out for a while, so.
Fair. I mean, it's just. It's just like Vintage Masters was like watching history, right? For anyone who has. And I think it has a different meaning to different people. So, like, that format was pretty cool. I was very excited about seeing them. I wish there would have been a piece of power open on camera, mainly because I want to know. It looked like they were keeping everything that could be black bordered. So I was really curious if the power was black bordered as well.
No way. They had white bordered Serendip Efreet. And I was like, really, guys?
Did they? See, the only white bordered card I saw was the Goblin Settler, because it's only in starter.
Yeah. I did see that. I don't know, man. Like, they did what they could do. And what was it? Sifka, like, spilled his water bottle inside his bag on his deck and had to scramble?
Yeah, I heard he spilled water or coffee on his deck, and then it's all proxies.
Let him do that?
Yes. Owen Turtenwall was actually complaining. He said he played against two competitors that had proxies in their deck. And from what I understand, Sifka was one of them because he spilled stuff over his modern deck.
Hey, man, the show must go on. This isn't like a normal event where it's like, well, I guess you just forfeit. People want to see those guys play.
I mean, to be fair, you're supposed to not have your liquids at a point when you could spill it in your own bag. Like, if it's your own fault, like,
See, I don't know, because weren't they saying
that
one
of the guys...
It's one
thing if your opponent spills it, but, like, if you spilt water on your own shit, like,
Weren't
I'm
they
not saying
one
like
guy couldn't get the Fate Stitchers he needed, and he just didn't play that deck, so I don't understand how someone else is running proxies in a different format.
Yeah. I don't know. Like,
whatever.
It happened. Like, we're not going to be the judge or jury on that, and no one cares what we think, so we should talk about things people do care about. Is there any of those left? Oh, my pick of the
week. Yeah, your pick of the week.
I was trying to avoid that, and then I somehow, for some reason, decided to say it out loud so that I couldn't.
I don't really have a good one
for this week. Like, I've just been watching coverage and not really paying attention. Like, I was trying to do the same thing Jason's doing, which is not react to these prices. I want to say Chain to the Rocks, but I want to say Chain to the Rocks every week until people realize that Chain to the Rocks is in so many decks that it should not be a bulk rare. So, I mean.
Well, keep saying Chain to the Rocks, because my God, people, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, that's how I feel about that card. Like, I just, like, if I had a grand that I just wanted to dump right now and it wasn't the holiday season, I would just go buy $1,000 worth of Chain to the Rocks and be like, look, I did it with Death Shadow and that card saw no play. So this is going to be really freaking easy. Like, I mean, I don't even have to promote the card. Like, if you just buy the card out to $3, everyone's going to look at it and go, yeah, I need four to Chain to the Rocks.
No, someone's going to look on, like, MTG stocks and be like, why is the price of, you know, wow, the number of stock on this card is way down and the price is way up. And then everyone's going to do what they always do, which was justify it after the fact and go, oh, well, you know, it's played in this and this. So certainly it was always going to go up. It's really obvious. And then
usually it's like a one or two of in a random arc, you know, random one of archetype and like a sideboard. And that's when people are like, oh, okay, I see. But no, like this is a four of in like five different archetypes in standard. Like, this card is the real deal.
A lot of Theros was opened, I guess.
There are cards in the set that are seeing less play that are more expensive.
Hero of Iroas is $350 and Chain to the Rocks is a bulk. I don't even want to live in this world anymore.
I think it's going to, by the time this cast comes out, by next week, we're going to be like, damn, we should have bought at least 20 copies because everyone else bought them off of your guys'
recommendation. I don't care. I actually, it's just like a self-fulfilling process at this point. Like, and if they do good, then somebody else can make money. I'm not going to go buy a bunch of these because I try not to be that person, but it's so easy. It's like, I have probably 20 copies upstairs, and I'm not saying this to promote those 20 copies, because if I was, I would buy a heck of a lot more than 20.
Pump and dump, run through the pump and dump.
Yeah, clearly. But no, it just, like, it doesn't make sense. And these are the kind of cards that you should be watching for, as, you know, especially a newer finance person, where these are the kind of cards you can get in really cheap and be able to make your good, you know, first investment and be able to actually turn that around pretty quickly. Because this isn't something that should be spiking in 6 months. This is something that should be spiking in the next couple weeks.
You know what's really making me smile? There's some guy that's like, Chain of the Rocks is so good, and he's got a bunch in his box of shame right now.
Yeah, probably.
So,
hey, get him. Well,
man,
there you
sometimes
go.
Sometimes your box of shame pays dividends.
Like the guy who had Pack Rat and was collecting them.
Yeah, I had Night Vale Spectre. I had like probably 50, 60 Night Vale Spectres just because I was buying them like a quarter. I'm like, yeah, these are good in vintage. I'm an idiot. And then I was like, why did I buy a card because it was good in vintage? I'm the dumbest idiot ever.
Yeah.
I was buying the promos because they're foil, but still, that was a dumb thing to do. And I was rewarded for it. And the only thing I learned was that I'm lucky.
Yeah. Like, that's pretty much it too. Cause like your reasoning was 100% false, even on the foiling part, because it's vintage. No one is going to be like, you know what? I'm going to go spend 10 grand to make my mocks look really sweet. But you know what to make my power really sweet. But you know what I'm not going to do? Spend the extra $3 to get a set foil. Because this promo, man, it's going to break the bank. Like that, the promo looked better than
the set foil.
Yeah, but it was really easy to get. And people in vintage don't care what looks cooler. They care what's the hardest to find. You're thinking of legacy.
I'm just thinking of all the money I made off.
Vintage wants the miscut Japanese foil printed on the back. So that there's a card upside down signed by, you know, whoever.
You know what I love about the vintage community? They put that deck together and they're happy as shit to play at a store where their opponent has 75 proxies just because they get to play vintage. I love that about that community because, like, they're proud of that stuff, but they're not elitist. Like, maybe that's just the vintage guys that I've met, but, like, a lot of the vintage community that I've met, I would describe as proud but not elitist. So
that's fair.
Like that's why I really like playing proxy vintage because I sell those cards. I don't accumulate them, and you know people are just happy to play vintage. It's a great format, and I think I don't know. I think proxy vintage is I've talked about this before. Doing like a 10-10-10 tournament, $10, 10 cents a proxy, 10 free proxies. You know,
that's kind of cool.
People interested in the format because it's a cool format.
Yeah, 10 cents a proxy.
Yeah.
That seems really cheap. You can proxy your whole deck for like $15.
Yeah, and then you pay the store $15 for the privilege of printing cards at home. Like, it's great for the store, and that's what it's about.
I mean, I get it. It's good. It's just like, yeah. I don't know, I just feel like as a vintage player, I'd be rolling in and be like, cool, you paid $5 to rent your deck for the day. I paid X thousand to build this deck that
yeah, and you paid X I only get to play. You know how to play the deck, and you should be able to beat somebody that has an inkjet printer. So
I get it. Like, I'm not saying you're wrong. It's just like, I don't know. I would feel like, ugh, why? Like, at that point, I would just go sell my power if I had a store near me that was running those tournaments.
Why do like, I not believe you? Why do I not believe you when you say it's not that you're wrong? I don't think I believe you.
No, I mean, you're right. It's fine. It's good for the store. Like,
those
there's
guys
no
want to play every weekend.
Just annoy me.
It's really funny that, like, one weekend they're playing at some, like, random win a bazaar tournament with, like, 20 people, and then the next weekend they're playing at a store tournament that's doing a bunch of proxies. And, it's fun. Like, you know, locally, Kevin Crone from, So Many Insane Plays podcast, comes down to Kalamazoo when our LGS does those. And he does the, I think it was either he or Steve Menendian invented the vintage achievements. And that's something cool to do too. It's sort of like, you get an achievement if you blow up your opponent's Sensei's Divining Top. You get an achievement if you make 100 tokens, or it's just all kind of different stuff that's like almost only happens in Vintage. So that's a cool way to do it too.
Or Commander.
So, yeah, or Commander.
That's the fun part about Commander, not to like go back to that, but there are some things that you don't see anywhere else outside of that in Vintage.
See him in Cube!
Cube. Speaking of Cube,
I want to get me a Mistress Toy Workshop. And how much do you think this card's going to be? This actually is pretty awesome. I like the silver border, and it's got the new M15 frame. And I think it looks pretty badass like that.
So what he's talking about is every year Wizards does a Christmas gift to their employees, and they have a card that's only, you know, available as a gift. The last ones have been like Yule Ooze, Fruitcake Elemental, Stocking Tiger. That stocking as in a Christmas stocking. So that's a kind of a thing. And this year it's called Mistress Toy Factory. And it gives you 3 colorless mana that you can only use to make tokens.
Spells or abilities that put tokens on the battlefield.
Yeah.
You must use toys to represent the tokens.
What does this card cost? Like, can I put this in Tristani?
It's a land, bro.
Can I put this in Tristani?
Yes.
No, you can't.
Will people get angry if you do that? Like, I don't know. What's the EDH? What's the EDH rules? Like, Jason, you should know this.
They frown on silver border.
Really? They frown on silver border.
This is a cube card.
Ugh.
It's a cube card.
Ugh, I already hate the commander community.
It's a foil silver bordered. So this is a unique card. This is something unlike other normal.
Yeah, but they'll be like, but that card's overpowered because they didn't have to play it against they didn't test it against the rest of the cards. And I'm just going to
Oh my god,
like,
Ryan. Seriously?
I know the crowd I play with.
And you're already messed up foot right now. You're like, my Finance 101 tip is you should use Commander as a way to access new people who you fucking hate.
I mean, you're not wrong. Like, it's not that I hate them. I just, like, I don't like some people's mentality in, like, Commander. I don't know. It's like those people started playing Commander to get away from, like, the standard elitists that, like, always talked about competitive magic and stuff. And then, like, they just become these Commander elitists. And so, I don't know. Maybe it's just my local area. Like, Commander around here, there's people that play it now, and I guess, like, maybe I'm just jaded because I remember how it was 3 years ago when I played. Maybe it's way different now. But it just, I don't know. Some of the people drove me crazy. And it really was, like, there's this Commander elitist mentality of, like, oh, I can do all these cool things because it's Commander, and I get to make all the rules because it's Commander. And, like, people started doing stuff like that where they'd put, like, you know, silver border cards in, and they'd just be like, well, it's Commander, so nobody cares. And so, like, I don't want to be that guy, I guess. I don't know.
You want to play this card.
No, you're a Commander elitist.
I want to see more people play this outside of Cube. You just got to go. Just go for it. You be the elitist that you are.
Realistically, the only person I'm ever going to play against is Jason. So outside of like when I have to hear Jason bitch because he's like, oh, you freaking turn two did this thing that you should never be able to do on turn two because you turn one, turn two that land. Then, you know, outside of that, like it's not a big deal.
So how much do you think it's going
to
go for?
Yeah, so to give you an example, like Stalking Tiger, I bought one last year, I think at like 35, right after, shortly after it come out. And they usually hold about that value for the first 9 months or so, and then about the time the next one's released, they will go up in value. Like right now, the Stalking Tiger is on buy list for a little more than what I picked it up for at the time. So, I mean, if you have a local shop and you can talk them into a reasonable price, you should be able to get one for between like 40 and 60 from a store. If you don't, then you have to wait for them to hit the online market, and you can usually still get them under 60 right off the bat. But it's one of those cards you don't want to wait to get a hold of. Buy it as soon as you can, because it's, I mean, maybe not as soon as you can, like get it in a couple of weeks, because the first couple of copies are always going to go way more expensive on eBay than they should. But I wouldn't wait more than like, you know, 3-4 months, because at about that time is when they, every LGS gets one, but they only get one.
So it's like Spider-Man.
Sure.
There you go.
I don't know anything about your comics, but yeah.
See, I don't want to spend $60 on the card for the cube yet. I'm not at that point.
Yeah, but like this is, okay. So Marcel, this is a good example too. And I mean, it's kind of a finance 101, even though it's not tied to EDH at all. This card is never going to get reprinted. This card is never going to be worth less than that amount that you pay for it initially. And if you look at the old ones, they go up at quite an exponential rate. Like every year they go up, and they will never get cheaper.
So it's like buying the stocks to sit on, and over time you're just going to make money.
Think of it like this. This is like cheap reserve list cards. This is like picking up duels as far as like if you were looking at it as an investment. And on top of that, you just happen to be able to play it in your cube.
Okay.
And they're rare and super collectible, and they're
and
fun to
unlike
play with.
Duels, like if you take duels to a vendor and you're like, hey, I've got a bunch of duels to unload, vendor's like, oh, I see duels all the time. Like you take these, and I'm way more excited to see these come in. Because A, they're just kind of cool. Like, yeah, I can't sell them to the average player, but the guy who wants it down the road is going to overpay for it, because in 2 years they're going to be really hard to find. Because they just are. The people who want them as collectors absorb them. And think about it. Every LGS only gets one. Most LGSs have at least one collector there, or the LGS owner themselves keep them. There's a lot of store owners that just keep their copy. So that's why they go up so quickly. It's like the amount of them that get out there initially feed the demand, but then if there's any future demand, suddenly the price has to skyrocket in order for those people to be willing to let go of them.
Damn it. See, now I may actually want to put a Stalking Tiger in the cube. It's an artifact. And being able to do combat damage, the 3-3 deal combat damage, and then you get to take a pack and put it into your hand. That's just insane.
Well, I have a Stalking Tiger, an extra one. You let me know if you want it.
Actually, I think, let me get through this Christmas season and then I'll see where my money's at. But I think I might have to do that then. That card is going to be, think about that, because you just take a cube pack and then you put it into your hand. That's how you do booster packs in cube, I found out. And all of a sudden, like, you know, Lore Seeker became more valuable to me, because I was like, oh, I thought you had to take like an actual magic pack. And I was like, that kind of sucks. And, you know, take a pack of magic cards and try to play that in the cube. But if you take a cube pack, all of a sudden, you know, you're drawing some gas.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. Like that's why those cards, I mean, that's why that foil for that card is so much too, right? It's just like, it's really fun. It makes cube even more enjoyable than cube already is. Like anytime
so
you can do something
quantity.
So it makes
cube tolerable is what you're saying?
I mean, we have different opinions. I've been really nice about EDH. You're going to be nice about cube now.
That's okay. Cube is the best. Jason liked playing cube.
Fine. It's the people who have the cube that are just insufferable.
That's okay.
Oh, God. We're going to have the cube versus commander argument. No, we're not doing this. End the cast.
No, we're going to have you signed my Chromanticore wrong. Sign it again.
Oh my God!
You should have seen it.
Maybe this isn't quite near mint. I'm going to give you negative feedback irrevocably.
Just because you're willing to put any willy-nilly beat-up card in your commander deck doesn't mean he's willing to do the same for his cube. Like,
you're
he needs it signed to the proper place. Yeah.
You were on my side 2 weeks ago, Ryan.
Well, man, if you got good cards in your cube, and then you get that one card that was beat up and not looking too great, and you put it in a perfect fit, it's rubbing against your other cards, causing damage to them.
It's giving them the cube aids.
Yeah,
it reminds me of, like, I busted a box of Avacyn Restored, like, the day it came out and got a foil Temporal Mastery. I was like, oh, I got to sell this on eBay while it's still 100. And I had my time wasted by this guy that, like, he won the bid, and then he kept asking me all these questions about it. He's like, don't send it yet. Is it in this shape, blah, blah, blah? And I was just like, you know what? I refunded his money and canceled the transaction and put it back up and got less money for it, because it was packed to sleeve and I knew he was going to be a bitch about it, so I didn't even want to deal with it. So Since then, anybody that sends me a question about the condition of the card, I'm like, it's the condition that I said it was, or you have a case with eBay. Like, don't be emailing me talking about crap.
Okay, Jason, that sounds like a personal problem you once had in your life. You know, that's interesting. And I'd like to see more of these stories about you and why you're just the monster that you are. You know, so thank you.
A monster?
I'm not the monster, Mr. Irrevocable Bad Feedback.
Oh my God. I changed. I heard you. I don't even think I'm all the way bad on that one. You know, I thought about it.
No, you got people on your side, which made me feel worse.
Those actually, I mean, it's sure I could have probably upped the, instead of gave him a 2, I could have gave him a 3-star, but I don't think past a 3-star would have been correct in that situation.
Fair. You know? You're still not as bad as the people that buy toys on eBay. I sold toys on eBay for a hot minute, and I was like, no, I'd rather get AIDS on purpose than continue doing this.
Oh, I'm about to make Jason's eye twitch. I just figured out what basic lands I'm putting in Tristani. It's the only ones I have out here.
Oh, no.
Ugh, these nice white border 4th edition ones here. Ugh.
All 4th?
No, because that'd be cool. Like, I'm going to have the rest of the deck all foil Japanese, and I'm going to have just beat up 4th edition lands.
As long as it's not the Aaron Sula, I go into my box of basic lands and grab the first 10 forests I find, which is like one's 9th edition, one's Khanza Terakir, 3 are white bordered, they're all from different sets, whatever, who cares, they're basic lands.
That's the way you're supposed to do it, just who cares. Hey, so
if you didn't spill a bottle of water on your deck, then you got no excuse for having jacked up looking basics.
I don't know, it depends, but if you don't care. But shout out time, Ryan. I think you gotta give a shout out to Steel Series again.
I do, absolutely. They sent me this awesome headset, and I have been using it now for months, and including tonight, which I am on my phone, which, you know, it used to sound like I was in, you know, Tel Aviv, and it sounds actually quite fantastic. I'm really surprised. So this is kind of cool too, because when I travel, I can, you know this for the future.
Yeah. So if you guys liked how Ryan, if you could listen to when he had it before and to now, you can actually hear the
inflection. Oh, it's a big difference. Yep. Let's see. Hold on. Let me get this information exactly right too, in case people are curious. And I also do use this for League of Legends and other gaming as well, and it works fantastic for that. This is the 9H gaming headset from SteelSeries. It's made for tournament, like series play. I know they sponsor, I think, Fnatic, one of the league teams. I believe it's Fnatic. But they, Fnatic. It's on the box.
Uh-huh. I can't really vouch for the product because they only sent one to Ryan. So I have no idea if it's a good mic or not. So you'll just have to take Ryan's endorsement with a grain of salt.
It's okay, Jason. You sound decent enough right now that we don't need to try to upgrade you.
What was that?
Oh, someone's so salty.
You can't salt without ALT.
Hey, it's the squeaky wheel that gets the oil. So, you know.
That's why he's being squeaky. Don't tell him that. He'll just keep complaining week in, week out.
But that's all he does. So he's just the bitter wheel. That doesn't mean anything at all.
The bitter wheel. He's
mentioning that Ryan sounds really good, but the rest of us don't. That's all I'm saying. That's not a complaint. That's just an observation.
I think the rest of you sound fine.
Jason, if we had you any clearer, you'd be just nasally and you'd just annoy listeners to the point that they don't want to listen to our cast ever again, so.
He was planning on it anyway.
What I meant to say was I don't care what our fucking listeners think.
There you go.
And so, Ryan, do I got any shout outs? I'm sure I do. I cannot remember at this point. Fuck.
Well then you're gonna get jumped in the line. I was on the Imps Prison. Angelo from the Pit Imps. Gonksuo on Twitter, as he's known. Does
any podcast that you haven't done?
Yeah, I haven't been invited to do MTG Potpourri. I haven't been on the A-Team, noticeably. Uh-huh. There's some other podcasts I haven't been on. Anyway, before I was interrupted, the Imps Prison is an interview podcast where it doesn't necessarily have to do with Magic. You kind of talk about whatever's on your mind at the time. Some people show up with stories. We got kind of on a tangent before we decided to record, talking about Artie Lang getting in trouble for a tweet of his, and that sort of spawned the whole thing. So it's on MTGcast if you want to listen to it. It's episode 1 of season 2 of The Imps Prison. So Angelo's a great guy. He's a real great podcaster, and he's a good member of this community, and I had a blast on that podcast. So definitely check out this entire season of The Imps Prison, because it promises to be even better than season one, which is coincidentally archived on MTGcast if you wanted to listen.
Yeah, you could check out Pit Imps. That's the other cast that Angela does with Brother Ryan. And I was on season one, so I severely doubt that this season is going to be any better than the one that I was part of. So,
I mean, that's just what he said. So he said that Marcel episode, hot garbage was the phrase he used. And I don't know if that's like a Pennsylvania colloquialism, but I thought that was a little kind.
It was actually, I mean, we talked about stuff, but it was a little, I wish we could have talked about something different.
I feel like it might have gotten testy because it sounds like you talked about unionization and you were for it and he wasn't as much.
Yeah, so. But it went into – we had his direction when we talked about it on like Twitter. That was like it went the right way.
Or oh, no. And then when you finally got time to record, it didn't go that way?
Yeah, it just went – it kind of like boomeranged this other way. I was like, oh, wait a minute. And it just – yeah, it left a lot of gaping holes of how – I don't know. Not gaping, but it was just – yeah, I but then I hear that other people like this, so I guess, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I listened to that episode, and it was fine to me, so.
You know.
You're just a perfectionist, man.
Hey, it's the podcast, you know, I like it, because every time that you do something, especially with people that you don't necessarily do something on a regular, and the direction that the podcast comes out is not what you expect, or a little bit different, I like that entire dynamic of stuff. It's, to me, that's the whole fun part. I need to actually go on as a guest. I had to turn down some just because I had been so busy. But I think work's going to slow down, hopefully, at some point. But December's looking pretty busy.
Well, Ryan's starting to like it, so if you have to turn down work, you should refer him.
Okay.
Yeah, but the difference is, like, people actually want Marcel on their podcast. Because he has, you know, the smooth voice, and when he talks, it's not just about seance and magic and finance and...
Actually, Ryan, you'd be perfect for Ents Prison, like just getting down and talking about stuff that has nothing to do with magic. I think, you know, that's where you shine.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be down. I mean, I'm actually really interested in doing that because nobody really knows much about me outside of magic. And I have a lot of opinions that really had nothing to do with magic that I feel like I can't post out there because I feel like I'm going to offend some of my magic crowd. So I'll be more than happy.
Yeah, you should go on there and talk about the handicapped.
I mean, no, not even that. Like, that's more of a joking thing, but I mean, I have like very interesting spiritual beliefs and stuff like that it's just like most people would find very strange. So I think that would like be a good source for me to be able to get that kind of stuff out there without having to have it directly in the magic player's face if they didn't want it.
While we're on this weird tangent, I think there are actually a lot of really good magic community interview podcasts right now. Chris Lansdell does one called Pairings. Obviously, Imps Prison is a very good one too. So anytime you hear someone's a little bit more about somebody as a person within the magic community, because all you see is their results or their work sometimes, and you get a little bit more of a like a humanization of that person, that's pretty good. So I really think that's very interesting how this community is turned into, you know, it's a real thriving community. It's not just a bunch of people that all happen to play the same game. It's really sort of evolved as a community and sort of taken on the aspects of any other gaming community. So I think that's pretty interesting.
Man, that's a long-winded shout out.
Shut your mouth.
And here's the guy that doesn't like doing shout outs. And he's just going,
I'm punishing you for making me do this.
Got the whole platter.
Oh, wait, that's right. I forgot I have one more shout out. Shout out to Domino's for making better wings than Buffalo Wild Wings. Not that they're setting the bar very high or anything, but, gotta give that
shout out to the gas station near my house for making better wings than Buffalo Wild Wings.
Let me give shout out to High Sentinel of Ashran for going down to 24 cents.
Somebody was talking about that this weekend too. They mentioned that card on coverage ever so briefly. Someone was like, I was really had high hopes for that card, and then they never mentioned it again.
The card's
maybe that's why it went down. Because the few people who had bought in thinking like maybe it was going to be worth something finally sold out when they were just like, yeah, the commentators don't even have like faith in it. Like when Rich Hagen gives up on a card, it's time for you to stop.
Yeah, it's done. Well, we could announce an early FOGO for Jason. And I'll figure out some other way that I could finagle it so that we neutralize each other. But
I was going to say we're all just going out to FOGO and paying for ourselves. Or we have the
bets.
Or we have the alternative of all going out to Fogo and forcing each other to pay for the other person so that it's really just a drinking contest, which sounds awful to me.
No, what we'll do is like a Hunger Games thing. For every Fogo bet you lost, your name goes in a bowl and we pull out one name to pay for the whole table.
Ooh, I like that. That means we're all in there once, except for Jason.
Exactly.
Jason, I like that a lot.
Well, then you can't stop making bets.
That's true.
If anything, we have a set amount of bets that we need to be making.
If anything, our Fogo bets mean nothing and our listeners roll their eyes because we've never, ever come through on a Fogo bet ever.
Hey, do they got Fogo in Vegas? Because
it doesn't have to be Fogo. We should just call it $50+ dinner. Like, that's what it is. Like, that's really what it is. $50+ dinner bet. Like, we're calling it Fogo because that's what it started off as, but it's whenever all four of us are in the same place finally, which is probably going to be Modern Masters 2 in Vegas, then Corbin doesn't think he's going. We've already talked about this. Corbin's going.
Well, hopefully we might get the announcement that we actually get Modern Masters 2 in Vegas, and by the time people are listening to this, they're like, well, of course they got the announcement that it's Modern Masters 2 in Vegas. You guys are idiots.
That's all right. It's my birthday. I want to be in Vegas regardless, and I don't care if there's a Grand Prix out there or not because I don't really plan to spend much time at the event. So it's absolutely perfect for me.
I say we just go out there anyway and buy said $50 plus meal, and then someone can just feel like, you know what, I would have spent that playing Magic anyway, so I didn't have to play Magic, so here's dinner.
Yeah.
I got to play the event. There's no way I can't. If we're going to go out to Vegas. Yeah.
Marcel, how trash do I have to get you Friday night to make you not want to play Saturday?
Oh, the more trash I get, the more I want to play.
Is there a point upon which I can get you to stay awake so long that you won't wake up in time?
That is probably more likely to devastate my potential plan in the future. If I stay up to like about 6 a.m. or 5 a.m., I might just crash and not make the event.
I like that better. Let's do that. So my goal is I'm going to stay up and drink with you until 6 or 7 a.m., upon which time you can either choose to go over to the venue still trashed and try and go play, you know, Modern Masters 2, or you can just hang out at the house, sleep for a couple hours, and do it all over again.
But see, that could have a negative effect. If I was to start drinking Red Bulls, then all of a sudden I might hit that peak where I get really tired, but then I wake up, and then I'm good for the rest of the day. And I'm just going to be playing like a Super Saiyan out there.
No, you'll pass out halfway through round 3.
Your poor heart. Don't do it. Think of your heart, Marcel.
What are you talking about? Did you not see? I rare drafted in 3-0 the pod on fucking Sunday after staying up till like 3 a.m. drinking heavily. And
yeah, Kevy JR and I were definitely all out on the patio like talking till like literally the sun came up. And then we all were at the event center later that day. I was like, I'm glad I dropped, and then Kevy showed up. He's like, let's do this. I'm playing the event. That was fun.
Yeah, I played. That was fine. But
it was great. No, see, the thing is, we're going to be there for a week. So we'll be there for an entire week. So I'll be able to get all the good stuff out of my system. So by the time it gets to the weekend, I'll have done all the other things that you want to go do. That I'll actually be wanting to play the event, at least, you know, try to play the event. Cause at that point, I'll pretty much have the full Vegas experience and some.
I mean, I guess I'd rather just have the full Vegas experience and not the Magic experience. Ah. But I can
Ryan
see Mayor.
We're going to go see Cirque du Soleil. You can have fun in the main event.
Yeah. Conley Wiz made a good point. I think he was talking. It was either on, MTG Potpourri or on Heavy Meta when he was with them. He was like, you know, when you, it's cool and all that you go, all these systems have a good time and just, you know, O2 drop and drink and whatever. But if, you know, the opportunity to go play in these events, like people, you know, come from around the world to play in a GP, you have the opportunity, you owe yourself to try to do the best you can if you come there to play the event and not bullshit around. So, you know, I've come to the conclusion that if you're going to go to the GP, either you go there to socialize or you go there to play and take it seriously. And, you know, I figure Vegas is all about socialize, but I'm going to get so much socializing all the other days that I could take it serious for a day or possibly, if I do well, go for 2 days. So, I don't know.
I mean, I guess I just, I don't care enough.
I mean, Modern Masters was a very fun draft format.
I mean, I'll do it just because it's probably going to be one of the only ways to get a hold of Modern Masters cards. more than anything else. Like, if, although they may not do a limited supply run, I don't know. Well, this is like conversation for 3 months from now. Oh. But when we actually have some idea of what's happening with Modern Masters, if it's even Modern Masters.
While we're at it, Heavy Meta was talking about, you know, the fetch lands and how the Zendikar fetch lands are the likely place that you'll see it in Modern Masters. And it dawned upon me that Modern Masters doesn't need the fetch lands to hell sell it. It's going to sell. And if you were to put fetch lands in Modern Masters, those fetch lands would be insane, depending on, you know, the limited print run, because everyone needs to get a four of, and then the foil ones.
Well, it would make the price go up. It would just make it not go down very much, like we saw with the Modern Masters Tarmogoyf.
No, it probably would go up. It actually would go up, because part of the reason it's down right now is because everyone's expecting that mass reprint. I would expect it to be 20 to 30% higher within 3 months, just like Tarmogoyf was after the reprint, just because people are like, phew, it's not going to be reprinted
it's
again for a little while.
It's not going to be in that
while.
Set, because the fetch lands aren't really that great and limited unless they do a bunch of landfall crap to support it. Like, they're not going to want
to make them uncommon.
I think the high likelihood are maybe the man lands or the filtered lands, possibly. But I think we're going to see fetch lands in either Fate Reforged or the final set set of the block, which is what the Dragons Reborn or some shit. Dragons of Tarkir.
I think when we return to Zendikar, we will see the fetches.
I don't think it's going to be returning
to Zendikar, either the third set of this block or the first set of next block. Nobody's thought about that either. What if the other fetches are in next year, right as these, their counterparts for the, pain lands are rotating?
I just think that with the arc that they got with the, you know, past, future going to the past and whatever this time warp thing, part of the warp would be kind of like, you know, how, Time Spiral had this color shift warp. And so all of a sudden your ally colored, dual, you know, fetch lands become enemy colored fetch lands. So I don't know where in the warp that's going to happen, but I think that would just be a natural transition.
Jokes on you. They're going to go way back into the past. You're going to get Mirage fetch lands.
Oh, no.
Rocky Tar Pit.
I hope that happens. Oh, that'd make me so happy. Because you know they'll announce it. We're reprinting fetch lands. And then they show you those at common or uncommon. And so many people would rage. Oh, I hope that happens. It won't, but I really hope that happens.
Well, are we actually done? Or is it, this is going to be the longest cast. I got to edit in one day.
Sorry, man.
Yeah, let's call it a day.
Are you recording?
Yes. This is Brainstorm Brewery, episode number 25. Thank you for listening.
Episode number 25, y'all.
Oh, man, I keep doing while we're at it. So we got 125 episodes. And, you know, we're looking forward towards episode 200, which is going to come. It's on the horizon another, you know, year and a half later from now. But because of all the work that went into 100, we already know what it takes to make a good episode for 100. We're going to need to get some more clips together. So we're looking for people that are interested in getting the episode in the last 25 listening through, or if you know some of your favorite moments from the last 25 episodes, send them in, let us know, and we're giving away tokens. So yeah, if you want to get involved with this, you want to try to help us find some clips and some good clips, we'll figure it out, but we got a bunch of tokens for you, and we want to make a good episode 200. So just let us know how you want to get involved. And maybe we will put this out. Maybe we won't. But there you go. Brainstorm Brewery. Peace.
Buy a t-shirt on Teespring.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. We got to keep... Oh, God. Yeah. There's t-shirts on...
Oh, God.
We are actually the worst. When other people say they're the worst, what they're trying to say is we're not quite as bad as Brainstorm Brewery.
Exactly. Cause yeah, we should put this promotion in the front of the cast. Here, I'm gonna do this episode and chop it up like Money Draft and do the dumb tangents and everything we need to get ahead of time.
Money Draft.
But, yeah, so buy a t-shirt. We got t-shirts from, Teespring. We need to sell 30, and it's going to end on the 16th or the 15th. So by the time you listen to this, you got about a week. And I think there may be a high probability we might not hit it because it's so close to this Christmas season and everybody's got their money tied up. So if that's just the case, we'll wait until after the Christmas season, then relaunch the campaign.
Tell people to buy you the shirts as gifts.
Yeah, if we can't make this campaign, don't worry about it. Don't fret it. It was bad timing on our behalf. You know, don't stretch yourself thin to try to buy a t-shirt.
Don't tell people not to buy our shirts, man.
Man,
if they can't buy our shirts, they won't buy our shirts.
If they can buy our shirts, they can buy our shirts. They can't, you know, I don't want someone to be like, oh man, I didn't have gifts for my kids because I got a Brainstorm Brewery
That's
shirt.
That's not going to be a thing.
Hey, you never know, man. You
With
never
the degenerates
know.
To listen to our cast, yeah, well, I guess we don't know, but.
Yeah, I mean, we're not heavy meta. Come on now.
So, you know, if you can do it, do it. If not, we'll
I really relaunch think you it. I honestly think you should take that out. Telling people not to buy our shirts.
Whatever. But fuck Jason. I don't give a shit. Yeah, this shit
ain't fuck Jason.
This shit is actually, not gonna make it.
Do you want me to do it? Fuck, dude.
The podcast right there. Fucking fuck Jason. I like it.
You know what? This Teespring is not gonna fire because I was dumb. And I should have listened to Jason when he said, "What the fuck are you doing launching a Teespring?"
That wasn't advice. That was me criticizing you. I should have listened when he criticized me like a dick. Yeah, what are you going to do?
There you go. So buy our t-shirts, Teespring. We got it. Brainstorm Brewery. We're out this bitch. Tune in next week.
We can be found on GatheringMagic.com and BrainstormBrewery.com.